welcome to the 184th episode of The Week with Roger, a conversation between analysts about all things telecom, media, and technology from Recon Analytics. I'm Don Kellogg. With me, as always, is Roger Entner. How are you doing, Roger?
Hey, how are you?
Good. So, Roger, you've had a pretty busy week. You just got back from Verizon headquarters in Basking Ridge.
Yeah.
I thought we could start with your thoughts on that. And then I also figure we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the new Apple antitrust suit. What do you think?
I think you're spot on. And I presented today at a New Street Research event on broadband.
Excellent. We can talk about that too.
If we go chronologically back, right? Spent half an hour with Jonathan Chaplin, who's a friend of the company, who runs the research at New Street Research for telecom. Presented some of our insights on broadband. Gave also a brief introduction to what we're seeing in mobile. On mobile, really interesting. AT&T didn't really suffer from the outage. We saw a one-week blip that went down, and then now they're at an all-time high again. So consumers basically paid attention, and then they stopped paying attention, right? For a day, it was like the biggest story, and it matters, but in the big picture, it doesn't matter. It was an outage of a few hours. But we see Verizon and T-Mobile neck and neck with NPS. It's really interesting to see how they're battling it out. And NPS is a leading indicator of how this looks like probably like four quarters out, not how it looks today. I'm very impressed with all the carriers because prices have gone up and NPS has gone up.
Right. But the corollary to that is that coverage is also better. Speeds are better, right?
Exactly.
To the extent that folks are paying more, on some level, a lot of folks, particularly if you live outside of a major metro area, where there is still build-out happening on mid-band, you're getting more than you were a year ago.
We're by far not done yet, right?
Yeah.
And so people are happier because they're getting more for what they're paying. All the naysayers about, oh, why did they do 5G? Where's the monetization of 5G? The monetization of 5G comes from fixed wireless right now, and that's a big plus. And it allows the carriers to raise prices because their product is getting and the service is getting objectively better, and customers are recognizing that. Then yesterday I was in, as I mentioned, Basking Ridge. Verizon invited a number of analysts and journalists for their 5G demo. They had their board meeting this week, and they showed us the same stuff that they showed their board. Overall, it wasn't anything dramatically new. It was the same use cases that we always know in the home. You know, the little bit different twist for Verizon is that they have a heavy emphasis on arenas and sports. So they showed some stuff on racing, on the NHL, on NFL, which was interesting.
This is their private network for coach communication, right?
That was one dimension. The other one was that they won something for untethered tablets in the NHL. It was also in two NHL stadiums. They have a solution where if you point your phone at the ice rink, you can highlight certain players. It gives you the stats live and things like that. Pretty nifty. We all knew this would be coming. Now it's here, at least in two NHL rinks. Then we did the obligatory private network and enterprise stuff, and we finished up with home. By the way, they showed the same demo as what Comcast did with the Wi-Fi sensor that you can detect if you have an intruder in the house with a disturbance from the Wi-Fi waves, or if somebody is falling, that you have an alert. The other interesting thing is that they talked about, oh, with our router, which is also Home Hub, that it connects with all different kinds of third-party devices. I've asked about it, and it, basically the answer is it's a Matter hub. And Matter is this standard that now more and more of the home device companies are signing up with because they realized, yes, fragmentation is a huge problem and the stuff doesn't work together. With Matter, it works together, and with Verizon integrating Matter or the Matter Hub into their home router, this will solve a pain point. It will be very interesting of how they solve.
Yeah, I mean, that's exciting, right? Because I'm one of these people that has tons and tons of home automation stuff, and none of them work with each other unless you buy into like an entire ecosystem, like an Apple Home or a Samsung SmartThings or something like that. Or you do some pretty heavy lifting with something like If This Then That to kind of bind things together. So the idea that somebody somewhere has recognized that the kind of smart home balkanization isn't good for anybody, I think is a good thing.
Well, you know, it's an industry standard matter. So Verizon just is integrating it into their router. I would hope and expect other companies to follow suit with that, and that we see this integrated in AT&T, T-Mobile, Spectrum, Xfinity, Cox, you name the broadband provider into their router. It raises the price of the router, but I think it's worthwhile. I think the router will become more than ever a huge battleground. I don't think I'm spilling any secrets. When I talked with some AT&T executives, they said when they made the conscious decision for moving away from the lowest cost router, the cheapest router that they could get away with, to providing the best router that they can to customers, the performance of the network improved, customer satisfaction improved, churn went down, you name it. People are just a lot more delighted by the whole user experience. And the investment in the router has paid off big time. I would say we will see better routers coming. Or people will switch and go to a different provider, which will most likely have a better router.
Well, I mean, I think there's been an enthusiast market for routers for a while, right? So there's a subset of folks, I think, that do care about it today. Most of those routers are, you know, gaming type, low latency focus type things. But I agree with you. I think routers are not typically very consumer friendly devices, but they're integral to how we interact with our home internet connections, right? And there's space there for somebody to innovate and to make it easy and to make it perform better. The question is whether or not it's going to happen in the kind of aftermarket consumer market, or if it's going to be spurred on by players like Verizon and AT&T. I know I went from an aftermarket router to the AT&T supplied router when I got AT&T fiber. Initially, I kind of thrashed about that, but it's been a great router and it does what I need it to do.
Yeah.
And I did get one of the newer ones that, you know, they talk about, you know, spending more money on and making it a better experience. And it has held true. I'm not sure everybody is quite at that point yet, but it's good to see the industry progressing in that direction, right? Routers should be more friendly and they should be more performant.
Yeah, no, and the aftermarket is a non-starter. This is about a better user experience. And it's not even about the bells and whistles that you can tinker with as an enthusiast. It's an out-of-the-box better experience. When you look at our NPS numbers for mobile and compare Verizon with Comcast and Charter for dropped calls, for browsing satisfaction, for all the internet stuff, all the network stuff, you see that Verizon is head above shoulders of the two cable guys. Why is that? The ignoramus answer is like, well, they're roaming on Verizon. Why are they not better? Well, yes, they're roaming on Verizon for 10% of their traffic. 90% of their traffic comes from their Wi-Fi routers. And what you see here is clearly the degrading effect of their Wi-Fi routers on the mobile user experience when it's 90% on their routers, right? It's an indictment of their router. And they better do better on the router, right?
Sounds like Verizon's got some tricks up its sleeves in terms of new routers and some other new use cases that are exciting to hear about.
Yeah, and Verizon is like on this, right now has like this charm offensive, right? They wanted to show me in here in Boston this week. In Boston is like the Elite Eight NCAA game, and they wanted to show me all the wonderful things that they're doing at the TD Mark Garden. But I'm like, I love you guys, but not like 3 weeks. I was there this week. I don't have time to do it next week. And the week before, Daryl was at the business analyst event.
So you're a hot commodity. We get it. Okay. Now.
No. They're trying to charm people, which is fine.
Let's talk about the Apple suit. I thought this one was pretty interesting. There's interesting implications in terms of definitions of markets and things of that nature. But can you give us kind of a rundown of what's happening there?
Well, the Department of Justice charges Apple with monopolistic exploitation of their market position and that they have a monopoly in the smartphone market. And at the same time, according to the DOJ, Apple has like 65% of the US phone market and 70% of the premium market.
65% by revenue.
By revenue, right? And when we look at it by unit, it's about half and half. How you can have a monopoly when you have 50% of the unit volume or even 3/4 of the revenue in premium. 50% of unit is not a monopoly, right? You can have a lot of beefs with Apple and their conduct, but complaining that they are a monopoly with half of the units in this country is preposterous. There's a very healthy Android marketplace. Samsung is a very strong competitor. And there's the epitome of open. And we all know Apple made the decision to be a much more closed environment. And people make this choice knowingly, and they have a choice. They have a very significant choice. It reminds me of what the EU did there. They want to have the cake and eat it too. On one hand, they want to have everything as secure as possible, and they complain about Android not being as secure as Apple. Then they want to force them to open things up. I think here businesses can have a choice of how they want to run their business. And unless they have really monopoly market share, they don't have the obligation to play nice with others. They don't have to help their competitors to do a better job, which is basically what the DOJ wants to do here. So I think you can accuse Apple of a lot of things, but not that.
Yeah, I think I have a little bit different opinion here. I mean, Steven Sinofsky, formerly of Windows 8 fame at Microsoft, wrote a really interesting in-depth critique of the Digital Markets Act that the EU came out with. And it was largely focused on, from a product perspective, the things that Apple did that solved a lot of the problems that he had when he's at Microsoft in terms of allowing anything and everything to run on the computer, right? And largely what Apple has done here is with the App Store is they've really locked things down a lot. They've not allowed certain types of programs. They've not allowed certain types of applications. And it has the net effect of enforcing levels of standard, you know, in terms of performance and things of that nature that I think have helped Apple from a comparative perspective relative to Android and other less successful, you know, options out there.
Yeah, because it was a deliberate decision, and I think that's fine.
Right, right. So on some level, you know, the App Store has been a great thing for consumers from a functionality and from a stability and performance perspective. None of that at all justifies taking 30% of everything, right?
But that's not what they...
But that's the issue here. None of that justifies the 30% here. And the general consensus
But that's
here,
not what the lawsuit is about. That's a completely different...
You should read it. You should read it. It is about that, right? Like they talk about like switching costs and levying fees, like the App Store fee, right? As evidence of monopoly. Nobody would pay 30% if they didn't have to. That's the problem.
But then this lawsuit should be about the Apple App Store and not about the overall...
It is about the Apple App Store. So they cite 5 specific categories, right, that they see as evidence of monopoly here. Super apps, right? So we don't really have super apps here in the US. Super apps are apps that straddle multiple categories. They're typically very popular in Asia. So you might have an app that does like payments and, Kick Messenger is a good example in Asia, right? You can do payments, you can do streaming, you can do messaging. Apple doesn't allow super apps. They don't allow cloud streaming in a lot of circumstances, right? So cloud streaming. So for example, game streaming like that. Messaging is an area where, you know, there's been a lot of lawsuits where they've been accused of, you know, not being as interoperable with other protocols, primarily Android devices.
I think that's absolutely fine. That's their choice.
But it's evidence of switching cost. And then the other two are...
Yeah, but it's like saying, oh, I'm outraged that in my BMW, I can't put GM parts in it.
Well, you can, right? You might void your warranty.
No, the engine of a GM doesn't fit into a BMW. and vice versa.
I think you can find some YouTubes that would, you know, it's not easy, but you can do it, right? It'd be more
well,
like...
Well, the same thing with Apple. It's not easy, but you can do it.
It'd be more like you get in a BMW and it won't let you drive to the Chevy dealership, right? That's the difference, right? Is that, you know, it's ecosystem lock-in, right? And then things that they're doing that are specifically not for the benefit of consumers. So making messages not interoperable. One of the examples they gave was that there's no way for you to hook up a non-Apple Watch to an Apple device, right? They lock out, only Apple devices have access to system notifications and things of that nature.
And I think that's fine. Companies have choices what they do, if they want to make their stuff compatible with others or not. And then the customer can decide if they want to buy this or not. And they have other choices.
Yeah, but the fundamental idea behind monopoly, right, is consumer harm.
Yeah, but I don't think consumers are being harmed. You know, this reminds me of Harrison Bergeron's story by Vonnegut. And we're running into the handicapper general here.
All right, I think you just lost 98% of the podcast there.
Well, it's a short story by Vonnegut called Harrison Bergeron, and I would highly recommend everybody to read it. It's a worthwhile short story. It doesn't take that long. It takes like an hour or so to read. Really, really good story.
So you think it's okay that consumers aren't able to choose what apps they want to run on their device? You think it's okay that they're not able to choose what devices they pair with their device?
They knowingly are choosing a device that has other advantages over that. Nobody is being hoodwinked into this.
It's not about being hoodwinked, though.
It's Apple's right, in my opinion, to determine how their device works. And they can make these choices. And you as a consumer have also the choice to buy it or not. And 50% of devices in this country are not Apple.
So let's take a corollary example. Let's take probably the most famous antitrust example out there, right? The breakup of AT&T, right? AT&T only allowed their own special black telephones to be connected to their network, right? They had a complete monopoly, right? That's the difference there, right?
Well, they didn't have a complete monopoly.
Okay.
At no point did AT&T have more than, what was it, 68% of all the lines in this country.
Okay, 68 versus 65. I'm not sure you're helping your case here.
Here's the way the difference is. They had local monopolies.
Okay.
So if you lived in New York City, it was either AT&T service or not.
Yeah, they were the RBOC, right?
That is then a different story where consumers did not have a choice. They could not pick XYZ Telecom, only when CLEX came about after the breakup of it. So that's a bad example. Another bad example is that of Microsoft browser story. Well, Microsoft had 98.5% market share with browsers because they bundled. There, I give you it is a near monopoly, right? There you have the case. But when you have 50% of units, you don't have a monopoly.
It's closer to 60-40, but I give you that it's balanced, right? In the sense that there's multiple options, right? I think the point...
Yeah. And arguably, the Samsung devices, from a device perspective, are better than the Apple devices. But Apple has managed to do better advertising, and apparently customers like their UI and like their ecosphere better than that of Android.
Well, I think you could make the case that Android and Apple are both guilty of making it very hard to switch from one platform to the next. There's very little incentive for Apple to make it easy to switch to Android, and very little incentive for Android to switch to Apple. That's always been the case.
Yeah, but that's not right.
But I think the issue, and who knows, maybe Android is next there, right? But like, the issue is that there's functionality that should be easy to suss out and easy to enable.
Harrison Bergeron.
That would be good for consumers that only doesn't exist because it benefits Apple's market position. And Messages is a great example of this.
Yeah, but we're running into Harrison Bergeron and the handicapper channel.
All right, well, whatever that is, right? But like, I think it'll be interesting to see how this turns out. I'm not sure it's as much of a slam dunk as you think it is.
I would be shockingly surprised if the government would prevail. Shockingly surprised.
It's going to change how Apple approaches the market either way. It's not necessarily about prevailing. It's about, and we see this with the DMA in Europe, right? It's already changed how Apple's behaving.
Yeah, because they were forced to do it.
To say that nothing has happened is not true, right? Like, something has happened already.
Yeah, but because the DMA got into effect.
Just the sheer fact that there's regulatory scrutiny here, Apple's going to be more likely to cooperate with things like RCS.
Well, they already made the decision to cooperate with RCS.
Right, because they saw this coming down the pike, right?
Well, I don't know if they saw this coming down the pike.
This wasn't a surprise to anybody at Apple when it came out. We know for a fact they've been lobbying about this for a long, long time.
But now the government is suing them for something that they no longer do, which is kind of funny, right?
Yeah.
So that just shows you how far the government is behind this.
Well, it depends, right? The point is not to win the lawsuit. The point is to remediate the consumer harm.
I don't know about that.
Anyway, as I think our listeners can tell, tensions run high on this particular topic.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'm smiling right now, by the way. So
good.
We'll talk to you next week, okay?
Talk to you next week. Okay, bye-bye.